Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, poetry inspired by the pandemic. I'll talk with Ralph Savarese about his new collection, When This Is Over. But first, the Latino population in the United States is large and growing. There are more than 60 million Latinos living in the U.S. That's 18% of the population. Latinos are also an important and growing part of Iowa's population at 6% and rising. Even though Latinos or the Latinx population is diverse and difficult to pigeonhole, they do find themselves increasingly at the center of divisive policies and rhetoric. David Peterson and Mark Ramirez have spent years trying to understand the anti-Latino bias and how it drives politics, policy, and opportunity. David Peterson is the Luckin Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University, and Mark Ramirez is Associate Professor in the School of Politics and Global Studies at Arizona State University. They are the co-authors of Ignored Racism, White Animus Toward Latinos, and they're on the line with me now. Hello, Dave.
Hey, thanks, Charity. Thanks for having me.
And Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me as well.
And both of you started digging into this research, exploring this bias before President Trump started running for president. So this is something that predates this political cycle where we've seen so much of this rhetoric heightened in the last 5 years. Mark, what was it that led you to start doing this research?
Well, we initially wanted to see the extent that what we might thought about as racism towards Latinos was affecting people's preferences towards immigration. But we also saw that spill over into other issues such as crime control policies, voting rights, and the electoral choices people were making. And so in order to understand this, we had to develop a unique measure of racism towards Latinos and really look at how racism towards Latinos has developed historically in order to understand that today. So that was sort of the puzzles that we faced. You know, one, the extent that this potential racism towards Latinos was affecting American politics more broadly than just immigration, and then also how to capture that empirically to do our scientific research.
Right, and we'll dig into to how you do capture that empirically, because it's not an easy thing. But you write in the preface of the book, Dave, that you had started doing this research, you were going to publish an article, and then the article didn't get published, and then things changed pretty dramatically, and suddenly it became a really pressing issue. Tell me more about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Mark and I, we've known each other and we've worked together for years. And we sort of, like, as Mark said, we started talking about this as a sort of potentially sort of like a one-off, right? That oh, this is an interesting question. You know, social scientists have spent a lot of time trying to get a handle on how white people's attitudes about African-Americans and the stereotypes that they have influences their politics. And Latinos have received a lot less attention by academics. And so we're like, well, it's, you know, immigration seems to be the one of the sort of obvious policy cases for that. And so we developed the measure, we designed a survey, we ran it, and we didn't necessarily have a long-term plan of a book in mind when we started. And then, yeah, as you said, with Trump's candidacy and with the ways in which he was tapping into anti-Latino attitudes amongst whites, it became much more pressing and it became much more evident. And so it sort of seemed to us that it was a bigger research question than we could try to explore more fully through a variety of different techniques and a variety of different policy areas.
And you call this ignored racism. Mark, why do you think that this is something that has been ignored?
It's one that's ignored in the sense of Dave mentioned, is that most of the focus in academia has been on attitudes towards African Americans. And when people go and study racism towards other ethnic and racial groups, they tend to rely on those same measurement strategies as they employed in studying African Americans. So in our community, it's been ignored in that sense. But also more broadly, you know, people don't see the language being used in these debates. It's over policies that are often divisive towards Latinos. They don't see these this language as being racist. They tend to ignore these things as racist appeals, as racist preferences, as policy preferences that are rooted in some sort of racism. And so then that's it's ignored among the broader public.
And Mark, we are having a little bit of trouble with your phone line, so I'm going to put you on hold for a moment. We'll reconnect, and I'm sure we'll come up with a much clearer connection. Dave Peterson, when we talk about this being ignored, you know, I've interviewed on a personal level. I've interviewed many Latino Iowans over the years. And in recent years, we have talked specifically about this. And it's not invisible racism. Latinos in Iowa encounter a bias all the time. But we're talking about it on a bigger scale, how it drives policy, not so much on a personal level, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. So the I guess the sort of target of ignored is more the sort of academic community, or at least within the political science work on understanding, again, people's attitudes about politics. You know, as sort of Mark said, that a lot of the work had been drawing heavily on the great work about African Americans, or it had developed a line of work on more general anti-outgroup sentiment on things like ethnocentrism, how much I like my group and how much I dislike generically outgroups. But there wasn't as much of an approach to try to understand the ways in which the legacies and histories of systemic discrimination amongst Latinos have manifested themselves in stereotypes that some whites hold about Latinos. And so that's the part that we think was ignored.
All right. And we also had to quantify this. So, Mark, give me a little bit of an idea of how you go about quantifying racism.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing we did was we wanted to see how ordinary people were talking about Latinos in settings where we were not involved in sort of everyday social settings, economic settings. And then we took these statements and tried to develop survey indicators that we thought would specifically tap at both racist language that was about sort of race, about skin tone and ethnicity, right? About cultural norms. And then we took these measures and we looked and we wanted to make sure, okay, are we tapping people's beliefs, our preferences about culture, or are we tapping beliefs about race? Are we tapping beliefs about political principles and ideology, or are we tapping things about race? So we look at sort of what we call sort of the correlations of how different survey indicators line up, you know, which is the best sort of explanation for the data that we have. And then we ran different experiments, for instance, looking at, do these indicators relate to, say, a white European immigrant or just a Latino immigrant? And what our data shows is that, you know, people are perfectly okay with, for instance, an Irish immigrant coming to the U.S. who's not assimilating into American culture. But the people that score high on our measure of what we call Latino racism, ethnicism, because it conflates race with ethnicity and culture, these people were very uncomfortable with having, say, a Latino, a Hispanic immigrant coming in who didn't assimilate to the culture. And so from that, we devised that there is some racial component in our measures.
Well, and let's look at this a little bit historically as well, because when we talk about Latinos or the Latinx population in the United States, it's an incredibly diverse population. And when you interact with a person, you may not be able to immediately know that they are part of this population. So in a way, this is a race that has been invented through this bias, right, Mark?
That's absolutely correct. And the historical analysis actually sheds a lot of light on this, where you have, for instance, Chilean miners who were coming in for the gold rush, and they have a very light skin tone, and they assumed that they were white, and they were ended up being discriminated against by white European immigrants, and sort of being categorized in sort of this pan-Latino ethnicity along with sort of the Mexicans that were already in California historically. And so you see this categorization of others, right, which is really familiar in psychology. We have this need to categorize others to help us understand things that are foreign to us, to help us navigate new experiences, complex experiences. And so this categorization occurs, you know, pretty commonly. But yeah, with Latinos, you know, anyone who might be slightly different based on skin tone, based on culture, you know, they were historically being categorized into this sort of pan-Latino ethnicity, often usually with disregard for the specific, you know, country of origin that they're coming from. So it is pretty common, and Latinos are diverse. Their political behaviors are unique depending on the country of origin, where they're living at now in the United States. You know, it's definitely not a monolithic group.
Does this relate to bias against indigenous people historically in North America?
We haven't studied that connection specifically, but we do know from the history that, you know, the sort of the more indigenous connections that, say, Latino groups have, the more racism they face, even within the Latino community, right? So it definitely seems like those groups tend to be at the bottom of the racial totem pole, both in terms of how whites perceive them, but also how other Latinos perceive them.
Dave, again, let's return to how things heightened with a changing political climate. I mean, this is not something that was not part of political rhetoric before President Trump entered the presidential race, but there was a sudden shift, right?
Yeah, you know, this has been attitudes about Latinos have been, and stereotypes and rhetoric about Latinos has been a piece of American politics essentially forever, right? I mean, it's played a role in our country throughout its history, and we talk a little bit about that in the early part of the book. But you know, it's part of what has shifted is essentially the partisan nature of it in some ways. So the George W. Bush administration and Bush's plans for what the future of the Republican Party should be was much more welcoming towards Latinos.
All right, and we'll pick that up in just a moment.
Nope.
We do have to take a short break. David Peterson and Mark Ramirez are here with me. They are the authors of the new book, Ignored Racism, White Animus Toward Latinos. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation iCORE training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, we'll explore some poetry inspired by the pandemic with Ralph Savarese of Iowa City, professor at Grinnell College. Right now, we're talking about the new book, Ignored Racism, White Animus Toward Latinos. And with me, Mark Ramirez and David Peterson. They are the co-authors of this book. David Peterson is the Luckin Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Mark Ramirez is Associate Professor in the School of Politics and Global Studies at Arizona State University. And for this book, they have explored anti-Latino bias and how that has influenced policies, politics, and opportunity in this country. And Dave, just before the break, we were talking about how the language has shifted in politics in recent years. Obviously, the Latino population, or possibly new immigrants who would become part of that Latino population, have been influenced by the debate over immigration. And we have seen the language of that debate change pretty dramatically. So I'm sorry I had to interrupt you, but continue with what you were saying.
Oh, no, that's fine. What I was saying was essentially that, you know, the Republican Party has shifted in their approach to this. During the George W. Bush administration, right, they had tried for immigration reform. Bush, as governor of Texas, had strong connections to the Latino community there. And then even after the 2012 defeat of Mitt Romney, part of the autopsy by the party was that they need to reach out more to the Latino community. And I think, as we all know, that's not the approach that President Trump took. Instead, he made immigration the sort of cornerstone of his campaign and 16, and the big piece of his motivations for that was, or a big part of the explanation for that was his rhetoric about Latinos, right? From the opening statement in his announcement to the campaigning about the caravan in 2018, right? The hostility towards and the depictions of Latinos in Trump's rhetoric ties exactly into these types of things that we were trying to measure.
Let's break it down into some of the different areas that you studied. And Mark, we'll start with you. And let's dig a little bit more into immigration. And, you know, of course, immigration policy has long been debated in this country. And you are able to, through your research, kind of break out where an anti-Latino bias comes to play in people's feelings about immigration. That's a tricky thing to do, but tell me a little bit more about what you were looking for.
Yeah, we looked at a broad set of immigration policies, things from finding businesses who are hiring undocumented workers to building the wall to, you know, the pathways to citizenship. And across all these different specific policy proposals, we find a pretty strong relationship between our indication of people's sort of negative sentiments towards Latinos and their support for these policies. And this is happening above and beyond other things that we're looking at, such as cultural preferences, political preferences, partisanship, things like authoritarianism in some cases, beliefs towards other racial groups. So in 2016, our survey included a lot of measures about stereotypes towards Muslims and sort of a lot of questions on Syrian refugees, because that was something that was happening at the time as well. And it really isn't in opposition to these other groups. It was really sort of opposition towards Latinos that is we saw driving people's immigration policy preferences.
And so you're finding that in these policy preferences, they're not so much about immigration policy, but they are about keeping Latinos out of the United States.
Yeah, so that's another thing that we look at. We looked at things like, you know, what's the percentage of Latinos in each county? Did that county particularly experience a big change in the Latino or immigrant population? So what we're finding is it's not really about what we call realistic group conflict. It's not about people are experiencing a real threat from Latinos. It's really more of like, are people buying into this national narrative of Latinos as Latino immigrants as sort of the boogeyman? And you don't really have to have an experience with Latinos. You don't have to have them in your community. If you perceive this sort of negative divisive rhetoric and you buy into it, then you're going to oppose immigration, sort of separated from your real experiences in life.
And you found in your research that when there was an indication that the immigration conversation was related to Latino immigrants, that changed how people reacted to the whole subject of immigration? Or has immigration in this country just become shorthand for talking about Latino immigration?
Yeah, so it's definitely the latter. So we did some experiments where we talked about hypothetical immigrants without revealing the nationality. And then we asked people, you know, what was the nationality of this immigrant? And overwhelmingly, you see people assume that it's a Latino. And that's sort of just what people assume and what comes to people's mind when they hear the word immigrant.
Interesting. Well, another area that you dug into, Dave, was criminal justice. And that was an area where you really found that if there was an indication that the person or the scenario included a Latino, that really did shift people's feelings on what was going on. Tell me more about that.
Right. So, you know, the starting point was looking at coverage of crime and, you know, sort of comparing the depictions of criminals in news coverage to the actual arrest rates. And, you know, it's sort of well known that there's a disparity, that the news is frequently more likely to describe or to cover crime where the accused is African American or Latino, and which is what we sort of document. And the disparity is even greater for Latinos than it is for African Americans, right? So when we talk about crime in this country, we've racialized it in ways that tap into both the African American community and the Latino community. And so what we tried to then be able to do, was some of the same ideas with immigrants, with the recall. Can you recall if the criminal suspect is a illegal immigrant or not, in sort of the same ways that Mark described? And we find that people are willing to describe people as illegal immigrants even when they're not given that information. When people harbor these anti-Latino attitudes, they take a more punitive stance towards crime, and they will be less favorable towards some of the reforms. So we had an experiment where we asked about body cameras, should the police officer be wearing a body camera? And we randomly assigned people to either read about where the person who was in the exchange with the police officer was Latino or not. And when people read about an exchange with a Latino, if they're high on these anti-Latino attitudes, they're more forgiving of not having a body camera.
Interesting. And another one of the areas you explored, Mark, is voting rights and voter ID laws. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, we looked at a handful of different types of voter ID laws because these vary across states. But there's a lot of support for voter identification laws across the United States. But we did find that these were related among the people that were high in this Latino racism, ethnicism, were more likely to support these laws. In other experiments we did, we looked at, trying to prime people or exposing people to increase in, say, Latino voters and give them African American voters and tell them, that turnout is increasing among Latino groups or turnout is increasing among African American groups. And what we found was that these primes didn't really matter so much. And we think that people probably already realize that these groups are increasing in their sort of political power. But among those that the respondents that were high in this Latino racism, ethnicism attitude, these people were more sensitive to sort of these Latino primes and more likely to favor restrictive voting laws. In another experiment we did, we looked at a law that came out of Ohio on purging registered voters who, say you don't vote for two elections, you get a card sent to you, and if you fail to send back that card, you can get purged. And so we asked people to play the role of an election official and gave them different profiles of voters, some who had voted recently, some who had not, some who had, say, an address on file, some who not. And the other thing we varied was, were they Latino or were they white or black? And we asked them to who would you purge if you were sitting on this election committee? And what we found was that those high in Latino racism, ethnicism were much more likely to purge the Latino voters. It wasn't the most important factor in purging. People care about having a verified address on file. They care about, whether the person was a felon or not was a big factor. People really wanted to purge felons off the voter registration rolls. But for those high in this Latino racism, ethnicism measure of ours, we did find that they were more willing to purge Latino than other racial groups.
I'm talking to Mark Ramirez and David Peterson. They are the authors of the new book, Ignored Racism, White Animus Toward Latinos. And the research you did is academic research. And this book is clearly written for other people in the academic world. Dave, how do you hope to see this information used?
I mean, I think the biggest part, I think, is trying to understand more broadly the ways in which racism targeted towards Latinos actually shapes our politics and continues to shape our politics. Mark just talked a little bit about the voting rights efforts. Our history, and when we learn about the struggle for voting rights, right, we rightly pay a lot of attention to the African American civil rights movement, right, and the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And we don't learn nearly as much about the extension to the Voting Rights Act in the early 70s that was targeted at helping Latinos vote. It's the part that made it set up requirements for multilingual ballots. And to recognize that when we hear about voter fraud, right, which is one of the things we talk a lot about right now coming into this election. A lot of the framing, a lot of the discussion is about non-citizens voting. And then, as Mark talked about earlier, right, when people have an image of an immigrant, of a non-citizen, that image is largely Latino. And so, you know, when people who are concerned about fraud, often their focus is on illegal voting, and that's essentially code for Latinos.
This information gives people a lot of opportunity to study, and hopefully it will inform some people as far as how they use the rhetoric. But we've also found that this rhetoric has been extremely effective, at least over the last 5 years. Dave, what do you think the legacy is here?
You know, one of the things that I think has been going on is that a little bit we've seen things shift in the focus. So, in large part due to COVID, and in large part due to other sort of changing circumstances, this election, 2020, is a lot less about immigration than 2016 was. And so, you know, Mark and I don't want to make the claim that, you know, everything is maps onto this measure of Latino racism, ethnicism, that things need to be put in those frames, that people need to understand it, that they need to have the lines drawn for them if they haven't already sort of done that in their head for a lot of issues. And I think one of the things we can then think about is how do we, if you don't want these appeals, if you don't want these attitudes to be defining in our politics, how do you break those connections? How can we try to break the link or call people out on the appeals that they're making and the rhetoric that they're using?
Mark, do you have anything you want to add to that about the legacy of really how this language has been used and how that's driven policy?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the benefits of the book that everyone can get is really understanding the history of sort of institutional discrimination and racism towards Latinos and how that comes across in our language today in talking about Latinos. And as Dave said, you know, just really understanding that when this language is being used, what it really sort of means and the implications of that are important. And I think to get away from that, you know, once we understand that, we can develop norms that basically say, you know, no, this isn't okay. This is not the society that we want to live in. And as those norms develop and get stronger, you can start to see changes in attitudes and rhetoric.
Do you recommend on an individual level that when we listen to politicians speak, do we need to think about this use of language, this sort of code language that is about Latino Americans?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when these appeals to race are getting made, I think, you know, most of us recognize that appeals to race are deeply problematic. And I think it's important to understand how they're being used when they're being used so that we can try to minimize their effect.
Mark, did you have something you wanted to add to that, too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talked about sort of the increasing negativity in campaigns. And so you can see that these negative appeals towards Latinos were acceptable for some segment of the population because they were appealing towards a group with this negative social construction without a lot of sort of political capital. And that has really turned into this growth and just all, you know, negativity in all sorts of aspects where you see lots of disinformation, lies about other candidates. And so, you know, if we don't want all this negativity, you know, we need to start with sort of, okay, it's not okay at the very beginning to sort of have these appeals towards, you know, just outgroups that segments dislike. You know, we sort of let the cat out of the bag, and then it sort of grows into something that we definitely don't want to see.
What comes next research-wise, Dave?
I'm not exactly sure on that. I mean, you know, I think Mark and I have been sort of moving in our own ways to different questions.
Do you have a question that feels pressing for you right now?
And in part, right, my work right now is focusing a lot on how people are understanding COVID and how they are responding to the COVID pandemic.
All right. And of course, if you want to continue down this road, we know that the COVID pandemic has affected Latinos far more strongly than it has white Americans. Mark, is there a next question for you to pursue?
Yeah, I've been looking at free speech attitudes and people's willingness to abandon principles of free speech under different contexts, such as when someone dislikes us something that you don't like, and then how quickly Americans are to abandon sort of these core principles.
Well, there are a lot of really challenging things right now. But as political scientists, I can imagine that in some ways, this is an exciting time to be alive. I mean, Dave, there's so much to explore.
Yeah, exciting is one word for it, Charity.
All right. Well, maybe hopefully things will get a little less exciting in the coming years. Dave Peterson, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Charity.
And Mark Ramirez, thank you.
Thank you so much, Charity.
Mark Ramirez is Associate Professor in the School of Politics and Global Studies at Arizona State University. David Peterson is the Luckin Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. They are the co-authors of the new book, Ignored Racism, White Animus Toward Latinos. Coming up in just a moment, the pandemic and this long period of quarantine has given Ralph Savarese a lot of new things to worry about. It has also sparked his creativity. He's been writing a lot, and he has just published a new collection of poetry. It's called When This Is Over, Pandemic Poems. I will talk with him in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.